SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Wednesday, race fans, from Churchill Downs, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online, and at our website too, stevebick.com. And I paused there at the beginning because literally as we started, as the music came up, Tom Drury was calling, so I had to say, show just starting, exclamation point. We'll get back to Tom. And you know, only had exchanged, just to send him, you know, the best wishes after yesterday's unfortunate scenario. Horse, boy, if you saw the video that Jenny Reese did it at Skylight at the training, say he looks so good. I mean, you wouldn't know anything was wrong. And there really isn't anything seriously wrong, but antibiotics, and that's that. And so, a couple of days and, it'll heal up and he'll be out and, on his way to Baltimore. There's nothing about this that derails him. Meanwhile, of course, the draw went on without him, and the late addition is things you know, very hot and heavy in terms of late additions, and between you know Mr. Big News jumping in and then South Bend at the last, literally the last second, about as late into slipping an entry slip in. As possible to put the field of 18 together, and there's been already plenty of digesting of the way this field lines up on Saturday, late too, 7:05, and had a little 12:30 yesterday. Had a kind of an off the cuff, not as formal as it's been in previous years. A visit with Ed DeRosa, usually Gary Young and Donna Brothers with us. This is the fourth year, the post-draw snap analysis. And the more Ed and I talked, the more apparent it became that this entire race will come down to what happens fairly early with the four exterior runners. New York Traffic, Honor AP, 'Tis the Law, and Authentic. We'll start to get thoughts and have people weigh in on that element, because the presence of Paco Lopez on New York Traffic is an instigator. Let's say that fascinating the way this came together. And speaking of instigating, let me give you the way we're lining up, and I do want to go over this morning's wet weather gallops and appearances on the racetrack with the horses that arrived yesterday, including the 3-5 favorite, 'Tis the Law, making his first appearance and actually doing a little something. Didn't just walk or even lightly jog with the pony. Actually, you know, went around Honor AP another morning and some light work for him as well, but with the racetrack absolutely swamped this morning, even floated, before the horses came out for the 7:30 training session. It was obvious that it was going to be a light day. Nobody was going to really do too much. We'll go over that in a minute. And we'll also, as I give you the lineup, set up the visit with Sid Fernando, and Sid is going to join us at about 9:15, and we'll have Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill and Dale, you know, a little early, 45 minutes early. Darren Rogers, Darren We've been putting off the invocation. Yesterday I said to Darren, you know, if you don't come on soon, it's not going to be an invocation. It's going to be a benediction. It won't be the big hello. It'll be the so long, thanks for coming. So Darren, either late in the hour or at the top of the hour, Steve Haskin has to move up a day. Steve traveling back to Saratoga tomorrow. And so we'll get Steve's pre-Derby thoughts this morning instead, in his typical 10:30-ish window. Nick Tamaro, I reached out to Nick, and I've looked through the Friday card, and pretty much actually have done the Friday card. And so I said to Nick, because this is such a unique calendar of racing activity, and it is closing weekend at Del Mar and Saratoga. So what Nick and I are going to do in terms of the handicapping, we're going to have Nick in top of hour three or so, and he and I will go through particularly the stakes sequence for Friday, for Oaks Day. And then tomorrow, Nick and I will do the Saturday sequence. And as has been the case, it's not unusual. It feels to me, and I haven't done the hard work at all yet. I only passed through the Saturday card to get a feel for it. And I looked at the stakes pretty well, actually, but it didn't put, pen to paper with decision making. But it does feel like the Friday card has, there's a number of seemingly strong favorites, not the least of which come in the Oaks. But I don't know, the first snapshot was that the Friday card might be slightly better. We'll see. But they're both deep, compelling cards. So Nick and I, the next 2 days to go over Friday and Saturday, and then on Friday, we'll get final thoughts from Nick, but we'll also use Friday as the Saturday preview and the weekend preview for Saratoga, okay? And Nick back on the beam for the last 6 days of the spa with his analysis, and it's been great, brought to you by Naira Betts. So Nick and I, 3 days in a row, and we'll also feather in plenty of others. Marty McGee tomorrow, Jay Privman coming, of course, and we'll reach back for Welsh and Grenig, and the survey is as many of the top DRF opinions as possible. And Marty is a little taxed, to say the least, with just he and Nicole Russo. We'll get Nicole through too. Just he and Nicole Russo on hand. All the correspondents are working, but they're doing it. The rest of the DRF team, usually there's eight or nine. The rest of the team working remotely and still churning out plenty of news and information. Part of the story that has yet to be written and a part two as part of the withdrawal of Art Collector. Minutes after we got off the air, Marty sprung the news that Brian Hernandez Jr. had come back with a positive COVID test, but he was also showing antibodies. And so they told him he is not contagious, but he doesn't know what it means necessarily for his opportunity to ride the weekend. So maybe he needs, I don't know, a couple of follow-up tests. So there's a story that has to follow. And as if it hadn't been enough of a deflating morning for the camp, undoubtedly. Also looking to talk to Bruce Lunsford, not just about the horse, but also Bruce, of course, for those of you that know his background. You know, came very close to being a senator from the state of Kentucky and lieutenant governor as well. And so Bruce's input on things around Louisville, I think, would count for quite a lot. The opinion about Louisville that really doesn't seem like it was thought out or required or necessary. Barkley Tagg yesterday and creating just a conflagration of reaction to the query of his impression of the protesters and the protests. And you know, Barkley admitted that he hasn't followed it closely, but that didn't stop him from saying something that just it just was, you know, so disappointing, if not unexpected per se, in terms of viewpoint, it to anybody that has knowledge or, you know, has proximity, you certainly would be aware of, you know, those kinds of leanings and from that standpoint, when it comes to the, you know, the reporting of racing and the view of, you know, what the job at hand is, it doesn't, and it doesn't have to, and it shouldn't color, you know, your approach to, you know, the horses and their running and their efforts. But you do carry a knowledge, you know, with you, and your respect or appreciation of an individual as a horseman doesn't have to, you know, be influenced or equated, you know, on the same level as your potential contempt and disgust for the personality. And this is, you know, when it comes to sports and you know, that environment. I mean, who was it that said they weren't a role model? That they didn't want to be a role model. Well, it you know, you aren't obliged to, you know, to look to, you know, certain individuals in certain endeavors as some sort of a moral compass. Sid Fernando is going to join us, and he actually is going to join us momentarily. And, you know, Sid is very close to Barkley, and he tried to, I think, yesterday after this scenario bubbled to the surface and, you know, created just, you know, instantaneous rancor and, you know, many actually having the same reaction to his comments as they have, you know, to the whole concept that we've discussed off and on the last 10 days. And that is that, well, what does this have to do with the you know, with the Derby? And why, you know, why is there, you know, calls for, you know, no justice, no Derby? And those people are responding and saying, well, there's nothing wrong with what Barkley said. He's absolutely right. Well, he's not. He's not right, and he offered a perspective that, you know, needed to have some context. And so Sid, I know, had conversations with him, and will be very valuable in this. to provide, you know, provide some added perspective. And I think what Sid tried to do was help Barkley understand, what the larger issue is, and that part of things continues to be lost on people who are conflating responses. So I'm anxious actually to hear what Sid, what Sid, and I don't know how much of the conversation he'll share, but some of it I'm sure would remain private. But it no matter what, it is very quickly, I think, made people feel like, well, it's not a feel good story anymore. Whether any sports story is a feel good story comes as a matter of perspective, like virtually everything else in life, and how people view things. So that's what makes the ambient conditions here in Louisville so difficult. And strained in a lot of ways, and it feels, at least as of yesterday, and haven't seen anything yet this morning, but as of the news coverage, the planned protests for Central Avenue across from the Downs, it feels like an added incentive to voice the no justice, no peace message. Sid Fernando, good morning.
Steve, good morning. How are you?
Good. It would be nice to get through 24 hours on a day-to-day basis without, without some tumult and without some upheaval to distract. It may just be that there's just too much pressure from being exerted from every quarter in so many different ways. You're very close to Barkley, and you know him a good while. And I said earlier that it didn't necessarily come as a surprise that he would have a perspective in that direction. But that's immaterial. It's the the fallout and the response and the reaction that now has to be dealt with. Tell us about your thoughts and your conversation with him.
I've known Barkley for many, many years. Just to preface everything so that I could explain our relationship, Barkley always refers to me as, you're one of those liberals. It's a running joke with the taciturn Mr. Tag. But having said that, in all my years of dealing with Barkley, aside from general politics, he's a conservative guy. I've never really engaged in his political discourse with him. I like Barkley; he's a great guy, and I've known about his political tendencies. But like I said, he actually let us whatever you deal in life, you deal with all the people, and you tolerate with anyone's beliefs as long as it's still something ugly in the public space or in your private space that you find objectionable, and at that point, you know, you either deal with it, address it, or, you know, you walk away from somebody. And in my case, Barclays comment, because I'm the Barclays, so I needed to call him up and I'll speak to the phone about it, and I did. I don't think Barclays realized, you know, that he just set, you know, on fire, so to speak. And we had a good talk, and I had some stuff to him, and Barclay was listening to my mentions, and you know, I think in retrospect he probably regrets saying what he did. It just came out. Barclay's a guy that he's a guy known as a genuine guy, and he, all the world coming into this race, you know, with his horse, the way he handled his horse, his career as a trainer, none of that based on a political bent, because, you know, it was all professional. Unfortunately, in really heightened times that we're living through, his commentary just lit everything on fire, and you saw on social media, and even national media. He was, you know, in the New York Post. He was on a feature in the Fox affiliate of Louisville, not to mention other places, and you know, Barclays keeper. Barclay's friend, known Barclay's own name, and I'm sure I don't have any words into Barclay's friend. He's already quite a few out there. But, you know, I think that my gut feeling is that it's said.
Again, we lost you there at the last second. The reception is
can you hear me now?
I can hear you. There's like a distortion, kind of slipping in, and I just didn't hear really the last couple of words.
Is this better right now?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, I just said I think at the end of my conversation with Bart, that, you know, I think Bart regrets wading into the political arena and having said what he said. So that's what I can report back, the general stuff from our private conversation.
Well, it just is unfortunate that it, you know, not only does it take away from, potentially take away from and diminish the, you know, the attention or the feelings toward, you know, the horse and the camp. It again paints participants in the industry as seemingly, you know, part of the challenge in this discussion on a, you know, on a widespread national basis. You know, the sport is, you know, exceedingly white, certainly, and it just, you know, it adds to the negative impression when it comes to the game's inclusiveness and interest in being inclusive. And, you know, obviously Barclays a, you know, part of a senior generation. This is not somebody necessarily you're going to be looking to for leadership in this arena. But that that doesn't matter. It just this is just what, you know, what people are going to hear and see.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to contrast because, you know, at Belmont for a few years, Barkley shared part of the shed row with Graham Motion, who's known as exactly the opposite politically, you know. Yet the two of them coexisted peace at shed row. I don't think politics was a topic, but it encompasses the past of racing with the present and future of racing, which is if you can embody Graham's views versus Bark's, taking aside, you know, all elements of horsemanship. So it's that contrast that society and the racing game is going through, that growing pain that's taking place in society at large, certainly encompassed by these two trainers who were in the same shed row. One doesn't partake in Twitter. The other is very active. One has remained fairly publicly apolitical, while the other, Graham Motion, has been highly political on Twitter and, in fact, has been heavily criticized for that. But I think you need to go through these periods of discussion to bring the sport into a mainstream, quote-unquote mainstream level. I mean, if you look at the LA Times had an article, Steve, recently where they talked about the support of the Black Lives Matter movement among sports fans, and 70% of sports fans support it. Now, that's the mainstream right now. That's opposed to 62% of the general populace, which also is pretty heavy, isn't it? Now, that's 62%. It's incredible that it's 62% because Trump's support group, his base, is 38%. So if you subtract that 62 from 100, you get 38. And that's the spot you're in. You have your 38% people who love what Barkley said, who don't support any of this, versus a majority of society that does support these calls for racial justice and social justice and economic and political justice, as well as 70% of sports fans. Now, that 70% of sports fans, by the way, is probably would have been higher or could be higher if it included support from racing. And I believe that racing element probably brings that 70% down because, as you point out, racing is a game that is still based around more of the Trumpian ideal than it is the modern societal viewpoint.
I appreciate the opportunity to have you help clarify and add, you know, and add perspective given the relationship you've got with Barkley. Let's do what we do every Derby and Oaks and dive into the pedigree conversation and try to figure out who, you know, we still have that equation, you know, who other than the ones who have already, you know, run a mile and a quarter coming out of Travers, and that group has had the referendum, at least we have an idea. There's still plenty of horses, though, said to project making the transition from 9 furlongs to 10. Let's dive in.
Yeah, well, you know, normally we're talking about 10 furlongs in May, and it's I think your pedigree analysis of that is probably more germane than it is now in September. Having said that, we see what the draw is. We see there's an overwhelming favorite, and that happens to be Tis the Law, trained by Barkley Tagg. He and the two other choices are all drawn outside. Tis the Law, Honor AP, and Authentic. So I think there's a really good chance here, given this draw, to use some other horses in this race. And everybody else is going to be big numbers. So I think what I've done is I've kind of taken those, you know, you use those horses. First off, I'll throw out Authentic altogether, Into Mischief, Colt. Not much support on the female side for Stamina. Obviously very talented. One last out, but not very impressively. And given his post position, you know, I just eliminate him altogether. You know, obviously a lot of people are going to still use Tis the Law and Honor AP. We've discussed their pedigrees. They're more than qualified for this race. Depending on the kind of trip they get, will determine that. However, let me just focus on a colt that I do like in this race quite a bit. And that's a easy, lightly raised colt trained by Todd Pletcher, Moves. He's a that is always thought of very highly. He earned $75,000 for a two-year-old. And he, by Candy Ride, Candy Ride, of course, outstanding stallion. He's a stallion that, you know, gets you all types of horses from two-year-old champs like Gary West's colt. Forget his name now. One of our recommendations. You know, the two-year-old champion that 2 years ago came back last year and ran the Derby with Maximum Security, had a really wide trip, ran well, but finished off the board anyway.
Oh, game winner.
Game winner. Yeah, sorry. Sorry, Gary. Game winner. And then he'll get you a horse of the year type. Like Gunrunner, right? So Candy Ride's a horse that he wanted a mile and a quarter. He gets horses that can stay a mile and a quarter. And this horse, he's out of a proud citizen mare. He's been brought along this year, like Justify. He never raced at two, but, you know, I think we can forget about that aspect of it, in a, particularly a September Derby. What I like about this colt is he won his first two races. Then he had 120 days off, and he came back at a mile and an eighth allowance race against older horses as the favorite. Had a little bobbled at the start. Ran a really good race off a long layoff, was beaten only a neck by a 5-year-old horse who was only giving him 2 pounds at an eighth. That 5-year-old, by the way, was also graded placed. And the money moves, he needed that race, and the timing, I think he's only got like 42 days between starts in this race. Real. And I think he's peaking it around the right time. He's got the pedigree. You know, he's going to be the price, obviously. I think he's a horse that I'm definitely going to use. So throw out a few others in the short period.
Pause. Well, pause here for a minute, Sid, because yesterday after the draw, I did the annual Twin Spires session. It was just me and Ed with Kent Taylor and kind of moderating. And one thing I said at the end, we were trying to make sure we mentioned, you know, all 18 horses. And I kind of stressed that, you know, these three participants that literally came in the last 72, 96 hours, Money Move, South Bend, and Mr. Big News, we look at this race, even in the regular circumstances in the spring, we've got such a pronounced understanding or at least awareness of so many horses that are making their way to Derby. And it's very unusual that you end up with three horses popping in here that, have really not had much discussion points, even when they were running in races during the lead up. I mean, that includes the Risen Star and the Bluegrass and that Oaklawn Stake win for Mr. Big News. South Bend, it ran in the Travers right off of the private purchase from Sagamore by Gary Barber and Adam Wachtel and Peter Deutsch. And then Money Moves, at least Money Moves, we kind of, we got to see at Saratoga, and there was rumblings that if the scenario that evolved were to evolve, that he would participate. I think it's very important today, tomorrow, Friday, as people handicap, to get familiar with these horses. And what's probably most important about Money Moves is that he has tactical speed. The other two essentially are mid-pack, stalker and close types. Money Moves has the potential, and especially drawing midfield, he's got the potential to set up shop behind the first phalanx and be in a very advantageous position. And Javier Castellano's the right guy for that trip.
I was thinking the same thing, too. He's got the right talent on him as well. And a lot of, as you really pointed, draw helps so much that, he's got the, as we're talking, but he's got the right type of profile coming into this.
Said like you're back. The phone reception went back to spotty. Go back to where you were 3-4 minutes ago.
Can you hear me now?
There you go. That's a little clearer and sharper.
Okay. Yeah. I think what I said was you're absolutely right with the right jock on him and the post position as well. He does have the pedigree, always highly thought of. So for the price, I think he's well worth it. He's got a high level trainer. You gotta like him.
Nice. He's gonna be an enormous number, obviously, coming in to this the way he has is starting at 30-1. There ended up being 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 horses at 50-1 on Battaglia's line, by virtue of the top-heavy favoritism of 3-5 on Tis the Law. All right, who else?
Well, the other horse, another horse I'm going to throw out here is the other Baffert, and that's Thousand Words. Now, I heard you talking to Jay Prisman the other day, actually while I was driving up from Daytona to Brooklyn, that was Monday. You were talking to Jay Prisman, and he kind of felt that Thousand Words has kind of hit his ceiling in terms of his figures and whatnot. But I actually think that this colt is having a resurgence. He showed it certainly in his last race. We've discussed his pedigree before. He's by Pioneer of the Nile out of a Pomeroy mare. He is a colt that, first off, Pioneer of the Nile obviously is the the American Pharaoh. Pioneer the Nile, who had originally been trained by Bill Mott on the East Coast and was then later to Baffert, if you'll remember, Baffert won the big one at two with him, the all-weather in California. I still remember one of the things that Baffert said about this quote near the Nile that really impressed him, and that Pioneer of the Nile, not flashy, this is incredible lung capacity, that they just keep running. And if you recall, Pioneer of the Nile himself came back the following year and ran second in the Derby, got hurt in that race, and that was his last start. He got a really brilliant colt with American Pharaoh, came back with another two-year-old champion with Classic Empire, who then came back and, you know, was against, preparation-wise and problems that he had. Cassie still got that colt to the Preakness with that, and he lost by a nose or a neck. But the bottom line is that this is a classic sire. This colt might not show the brilliance and the swashbuckling nature that American Pharaoh did, but he's a horse I think stays the trip. He's coming back to form. He's another expensive, well thought of horse, and with the draw for him too, I think because I think he'll just be. He's just going to continue to run, the way this race unfolds, I think he's got a shot to, be on the board.
One of the things said that I took to this horse early on. It happened that I was out in California, for virtually everything that went on with him, his first three starts, his maiden win, and then I was at the Los Alfiatirti, and then I was at the Lewis, and what I liked immediately about him in terms of the running style was those even quarters. And, we say this every year when it comes to mile and a quarter races, running quarters evenly, 24 and 2, 24 and 3, 24 and 3, 24 and 4, yeah. 24 and 3. You run five quarters in sub 25 fashion, that wins a lot of mile and quarter races. And
exactly.
He's a horse too, because you add up the seconds, and it's 202. and 202 is a pretty fashionable number when it comes to running a mile and a quarter. There was also the matter of him not wanting horses to get past him, once he gets to the front. And he's going to have to run even better than he did in the Shared Belief. He's going to have to run faster than he ran in the Shared Belief, essentially, to impact the horses that have already run, let's say 2 to 3 lengths faster than he has in terms of evaluation, the speed evaluations. So you're gonna make trouble for me, because I happen to really like this horse, just because I got to be up close to him early on, and then started to really wonder what was happening. But he certainly did right the ship in time to get here, and happy for Dennis Alba, who puts a lot in, and he's had success, but the kinds of wins that he really wants are in the classic. So it'd be suit me fine if this horse ran big. I'm certainly going to have some saver tickets involving him, because I
yeah, absolutely
jump off the roof if he succeeds, and I wasn't involved a little bit.
Yeah, really, when you look at his record, he's only had that one bad race. And when he stumbled at the start, he finished. I think it was just a big news, right? When he shipped and he
That Oakland he, that Oakland stake where I mean he was dismal, but he had run kind of a dull. A dull race in the San Felipe, and he was he just backed out of that race so pointedly that you just said, ooh, this is something's wrong here. I mean, there was no excusing the way he got beat in the San Felipe, and that was troubling. And then the Oakland Stake was a unmitigated disaster. So.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. It seemingly went south, but as soon as, he righted the ship with a good effort behind Uncle Chuck, and then when he got to Del Mar, he's just been tremendous down there, and you can see it. And when I say tremendous, I don't mean just the win in the shared belief, which a lot of people wanted to write off to Honor AP, the short too short for him, and this and that. You watch those workouts, he's like a different horse than he was, back in late spring.
Yeah, exactly. And also, by the way, the thing about this horse is even when he wins, he doesn't win by much because he's just grinding. He's a grinder. Basically, he'll grind. And what Baffert, I think, has found, going back to some of his earlier successes, is he needs to be right there turning for home. He needs to be right up close turning for home so that he can just keep grinding away, and he's got that competitive fire once he's there, And if you look at his four best races, Steve, at the stretch, his first time up, he was first by a head. His second time, he was first by a head. He won. The third time, he was second, and he won. And then his last race, he was first, leading throughout, and he kept going. And, obviously he held off Honor AP in that race, too. If it's a mile and a 16th, and it visually didn't look good for you because you felt Honor AP was gaining on him, that's fine. But this horse is a horse, like you said, who runs those quarters, and he'll continue to grind even if it's a small margin. So I think he's a good play at that.
How about that? All right, you've already produced two names that are going to be enlightening for people that are looking for pedigree style influence on Saturday.
Yeah.
Money Moves and Thousand Words. Next,
I'm going to go with a horse from a sireline that's been absolutely fantastic in the Derby. It's the same sireline as Pioneer of the Nile, and that's the Fappiano line going through Unbridled, which is a line that's been really one of the more dominant lines in American classic racing. And this colt comes through the branch of Unbridled Fung, and that's New York Traffic. He's by Cross Traffic, who was actually a few years ago the leading first crop sire. Surprisingly, he had that good filly, the Champion. What you know about him already is that he's run a mile and 16th in the Louisiana Derby.
True.
And, he fires every single time. He had to chase that horse in the Louisiana Derby by you. But he's come back. He was second a length to Maxfield. Last time out, he almost nailed Authentic, lost by a nose. Coming up to this race really well. He's, he's by Cross Traffic, who won the Whitney. There's plenty of supporting stamina in the background. He's already shown, he gets a mile and 3/16. He's a horse that he's going to be in the top four. He doesn't win as much as expect but you've got to include him in your tickets just because of the way he runs. And he's obviously a genuine coal to fire, and he's run against, you know, all the big horses that have been coming on the trail from the early part of the year and last year. Horses like Independence Hall, who was once highly thought of. She was out up when he's run against, a Wells Bayou. So authentic. So he's mixed it up with, and I think that mile and a quarter is going to be his friend. He's got the sire line for it, and he's already shown us, what he does on the track. He's another horse that's going to be up close, too. So, where is he breaking from?
He's outposted 15.
Yeah, he was on the outer edge, but I think that is wrong with him. Your comment, Tim?
I'm struggling with New York traffic for a couple of reasons, and the early, he's obviously going to be involved. Paco Lopez knows only one way of going, and that is to mix it up and throw some elbows. And in a lot of ways, I mentioned this as part of the post draw, instant read. This race, so much of what is going to happen in here boils down to those four horses in the extreme four posts. The New York Traffic in the 15, Honor AP in the 16, Tis the Law 17, Authentic 18. And the pressure, there's going to be, as if there wasn't enough pressure already on Manny Franco, I think there's even more now. And, you got, for starters, Franco is surrounded by the two most experienced, not just Derby jocks in the race, but two of the most experienced Derby jocks in history. I mean, Smith is in his 26th, and Johnny's in his 22nd. Then you got Paco, who's just, who's a spark plug and who's a bit of a wild card. He's going to, certainly do what he can to gain position and to string the three out. And, that part of the equation, who is going to be able to clear or at least find a comfortable zone to set up shop, that's the key. And Authentic, what Baffert's going to do, and Johnny, he's going, and Manny has to at least draft forward. Smith is going to play the hand as they break, and I think New York Traffic goes.
I think so. He goes.
So, there's suddenly, four horses that are looking for position early. Now, the good news is that Winning Impression in the 13 is going to fall out of it. Attachment Rate doesn't have, he's not without speed, but he's kind of a mid-pack stalky type. Sol Volante, it'd be nice if he galloped at some point. He's ponied every day that he's been here. Necker Island falls out of it. So there's going to be room to their left past the stands. And that is, to me, the race in a nutshell, that pass down the quarter mile stretch to the turn. And that'll establish what's going to happen here. Thousand Words, who you talked about, he's in a beautiful position sitting there. He'll watch. I would imagine Giroux, kind of goes forward a little bit. Maybe he actually grabs the rail easily enough and sits, third, fourth, depending on what the battle produces from the outside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I agree. That's a good analysis right there. Try to pay bucks.
Well, three interesting players: New York Traffic with Sid, and the lowest of the prices involved in this, and 1,000 words and money moves. So you got kind of one from column A, one from column B, and let's see. The New York Traffic is 20-1, 15-1 on 1,000 words. And 20-1 or 30-1 on money moves. You're putting a line through off the ticket.
What luck in this race? But I mean,
I'm losing you. Said I'm that distortion is
it's back.
Yeah.
Can you hear me, Steve?
Yeah, that's better. That's much clearer.
Okay. I threw out King Guillermo just because, I like the horse. He's my Uncle Mo, the hottest horse in the U.S. now, but he's just got too long a layoff, I think, to overcome here.
I am grappling with that myself. He looks terrific from a physical standpoint. You know, I mentioned to everybody this morning, we watched as... not everybody was out. A couple of horses went early, like Max Player, for instance. Steve Asmussen, pretty notorious for coming out with first sets. And so Max Player did not come out for the training session. But Authentic, Tis the Law, Honor AP, New York Traffic, Attachment Rate, Sol Volante, as I mentioned, just ponied. Mr. Big News, first look during the session. South Bend, as well, out under the Mott. No saddle cloth, but Mott, obviously the green pad. And Money Moves wearing a D. Wayne Lucas. He's in the Lucas barn. Todd sending him to D. Wayne. King Guillermo, Enforceable, and Finnick the Fierce. They were all. They were all out and about during the training session, which, of course, you can watch on YouTube. They keep putting it up. And you know, it was interesting that Tis the Law actually, for a first day, actually, kind of jogged, had kind of a spirited jog. And considering the conditions, Sid, I thought that Honor AP was actually a fairly energetic, over the going. And for the second morning in a row, Enforceable, Davy Carroll, Davy Carroll has got his hands full again this morning with Enforceable, who is in really good spirits.
Yeah. Well, King Guillermo, the training like a fresh horse,
Yep.
But to win a Derby with a 130-day layoff, that would be some kind of training feat, wouldn't it?
To say the least. And he's got there's plenty of interest. That's part of the remarkable element of the video era of tracking these horses that is fairly. Not recent. It started with TVG and the works back when, and has been taken to another level with XBTV, having cameras on site at so many venues, and including places like Palm Meadows even. So the opportunity to see these horses, as opposed to years ago where they were sort of out of sight and they would show up here. It's one of the reasons also, that I've come here typically for 2 weeks, because I already, here we are day three, and it just, you don't have adequate time, 30 hours. There's a big difference between 30 hours of coverage versus 15. Having the video and having these horses, show up here and even before they get here, to have an idea of how they've been doing between you know, their last starts, and especially with this horse who's been who last ran when they were supposed to run the Derby.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's I know some people are being dismissive of the field in general, and it's a little unfair just because I mean the race in May would have been completely different when you think about like a Nadal, for instance. So you just don't know the development curve and the interruption elements. We won't know how good this crop. I mean, typically you wait until you know they've all run at four. We're really going to need much of next year to have an understanding of how good this group is. And of course, the top finishers here and in Baltimore will end up at Keeneland in the Breeders' Cup. So we'll get some referendum on their on them when they face off against Elders. But give this crop time to to really develop and get into a more a more traditional series of preparation and performance.
Yeah. I mean, in my opinion, it seems like a pretty good crop. I mean, certainly the law coming into this race is as good a three-year-old as, recent vintage. If he were to win and go on. But everything he's done to this point has been super impressive. Of course, he's following a few Triple Crown winners, so that's a tall order, but he's a quality colt.
No, and as we've established, when you fold in the Travers as an added, feature, right? I mean, there was that era. I guess it was who? It was Citation that won the Derby, then ran at something else, and then the Preakness, and then mm-hmm. the Withers, I think, was thrown in for added measure. It's going to be obviously a modern era oddity when it happens between here and 4 weeks from Saturday in Baltimore.
Yeah, that's right.
Sid, before we wrap up, a quick thought about the fillies. You got an Oaks thought?
What I will do is Gammon like. Or Dominion, like Authentic, is an Into Mischief. We've talked about this before. His wheelhouse is really 6 to 8.5 furlongs, but lately he's been getting stronger mares. So you're going to start to see them stretch out more and be more comfortable at 9 furlongs and perhaps even further. But she, obviously, her 1-2 turn experience was precarious, and I think Speech has come back to win the Ashland. Swiss Skydiver is proven at 10 furlongs. She's cutting back to 9. There's that other Daredevil in there as well. My feeling is to completely knock her out of the top two and use Swiss Skydiver, Speech, and the other filly, the other Daredevil.
Interesting. Boy. There was a call to bring, We'll Take Charge back? Is there going to be a call to bring Daredevil back? Anyway, and you're talking about She Dares the Devil, who has really kind of put together a nice resume. And other than Swiss Skydiver and Venetian Harbor kind of leaving her in the wake, I mean, she had a issues that prevented her from running her usual, putting herself into the race in the usual spot. But she's made a very positive impression and is getting plenty of attention as an inclusion if you're looking to to add some price spice to the the obvious trio.
Yeah, that's right.
Sid, greatly appreciate both halves of the conversation this morning. And I think we'll have to save some of last weekend's race results, including win-win-win, taking the forego, and of course Channel Maker with another grade one. But you know, two stallions in English Channel and Hattrick, that, you know, I was going to ask you for some reaction, but it
Hattrick has died.
Yeah, he's gone.
Yeah, Hattrick has died, and English Channel, you know, he's just a great sire of turf horses, particularly on soft turf courses. You know, that's what English, that's what Channel Maker got again. His two wins, I think, grade one wins, bookends have been on soft turf courses. So, you know, that's something he likes.
Yes, I think the man of war, right?
The stamina.
Yeah, the man of war. The man of war. Well, and English Channel telegraphed that himself with his Breeders' Cup win at Monmouth on the squishy turf. So, part of his lore. And you mentioned Uncle Mo. Uncle Mo with a huge weekend last weekend. Yoppin and even Bye Bye Melvin. If ever there was a display of Uncle Mo's versatility, it came within about an hour and a half on Saturday in the Amsterdam. The Saranac.
And expect more next year because, as I pointed out to Melissa Nolan, one of your faithful listeners on here, and she asked me a question, are these 3-year-olds on his most expensive stud fee? No, they're not. These are the ones on $75,000 stud fee. Next year's 3-year-olds, this year's 2-year-olds, will concede at $150,000 stud fee. So we're going to get some, you know, big time Uncle Mo performances in the next several years.
Sid Fernando, everybody. Sire Watch, Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. And Sid will recap, obviously, the big weekend, not just the big weekend. they're going to draw the Saturday cards at Del Mar at Saratoga. We're going to have the hopeful and the futurity and the debutante and the spinaway. We got 2-year-olds that are going to win grade ones over the weekend, Saturday and Monday. So there's going to be a lot to digest, and it'll also be the second day of the Phasic sale. as if there wasn't enough going on.
Yeah, exactly. All right, good talking, Steve. I'll see you later, bro.
Sid, I appreciate it. Sid Fernando, everybody, follow Sid. We're going to take a timeout a little past the top of the hour, and going to see if Darren is free from his obligation. He was going to join us at in the 9:45 to 10 range. So I moved from the front part of the parlay, from the front part of the room to the back, and it's just so quiet here. Usually the photographers have started to, you know, populate and set up all their electronics and all their charging gear and so forth. But there's just nobody. They're here. They're going to be here. They haven't, you know, everything seems, you know, kind of delayed and moderate, in the preparations towards, Friday and Saturday. I did hear from Hammer, and it is entry day at Kentucky Downs. They'll take entries for, the opening card on Monday. So starting to look forward to that too. So there'll be no shortage, of things to be keeping an eye on. I also reached out to Bill Downs, having talked about the Indiana action. If you listen to the replay, Bill and I went at it, put it together, and I've got, the pick five laid out at Derby Trail, and I didn't put the ticket together yet. Because I wanted to see if they were going to be on the turf. The rain here seemingly heavier than the rain that they got in Shelbyville. So it looks like for now, at least half an hour ago, Bill said they were still on the turf. There's the anchor leg of the pick five at Indy today with those four stakes and then the mile claiming race, the last of the of the thoroughbred races, and the anchor leg of the pick five. So I'll have an Indy play today, and we also have to look at yesterday and the results from a couple of notable races, including a good looking maiden winner yesterday here. If you were watching the Champions Day card from Churchill Downs as the Derby meet got started today, kind of a middle of the road day. There is the Unbridled Sydney as the stake feature, goes as the ninth turf sprint, three and up fillies and mares, and that turf, we'll see. Did we get a decision? I think we Saratoga's off the turf. I sent out that and the distances of the races that are coming off, including the stake, including the with anticipation, which is too bad. So we'll get, it's getting close. It's 10 o'clock. So we'll get some more of those details. I've got some other things, to talk about, including, from Monday afternoon, the press release from Equibase regarding the GPS timing system and, an encouraging response, toward rectifying the timing issues at the places that are using the GMAX. So let's take a break here. We'll come back. Lots to do yet, including a visit with Steve Askin and Nick Tamaro. Nick and I will handicap the Friday stake sequence. Seth Merrow later. Darren Rogers back to the Downs after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Two-year-olds in California, Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Our Pennsylvania breeding program was, of course, impacted by the pandemic. Now, with our country getting back to work, we'd like to again talk about our program, the best in North America. Our breeder awards will remain up to 50% for PA-sired PA breds. Owner bonuses will also stay at up to 40%. Restricted races will again be run at all three PA tracks, and PA Day at the Races will return. I'm Brian Sanfratello. For more, please visit PABred.com.
From BRL Equine, the people that bring you EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield, now comes Flexify HA, the most advanced, scientifically based joint supplement on the market. To find out more, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880. To be the best, give them only the best. BRL Equine.